Okay, it's September 24th, 2012, and I'm Joan Weaver from McKinsey Library, and we have Rosetta Graff here from the library, and we are interviewing Marjorie Scheifler on her involvement with the 1979 tractor case. Now, closer.
When we were referring to the fact that when we first got started with this, farmers were paying 18 and 19% interest. And our son had come back. He went to college, ROTC, 4 years in the military, and came back to farming in 75 and 76. And so we expanded. We borrowed money and expanded and went into irrigation and all this stuff. And everybody said, oh, yeah, you know, what's the lending agency that we were talking about? The Federal Land Bank said, how much money do you want? You know, borrow money. So we did. And by 1978 and 79, we were getting in trouble. And then when the interest rates went sky high. So that was a lot of what started the American agriculture movement. You had what we could decide to we were going to call ourselves as professionals. We were professionals, and we were getting no payment for being the professionals that we were. The price of machinery was just skyrocketing. The price of our crops was going down. Interest was 18 and 19%. And I don't care how good a farmer you are, you're not going to make it unless you have something that's going to help you out. And like Ed said about the dairy farmers, they weren't interested in striking. They were doing fine. But when we started out in Edwards County, we had Daryl and Jim Titus. Well, there would be like two carloads of us that would go from town to town, and we would give these talks, and they would call an AAM meeting of the farmers in that county, and then we would go talk to them. And we all took our little turn, and we said our little thing. Alvin Wheaton went some, and of course Daryl is so good, you know, with talking. And I always gave the woman's perspective. And they were, most of the time, there would be farmers and their wives, you know, would come to the meeting. But when Ed talked about Fredonia, we drove 2.5 hours or whatever it was clear down to Fredonia, and I had my little speech for the women. There was not one woman in the crowd. The men left their wives all at home. So then we decided we were going to strike. I have pictures of the tractors coming from the west. And the big tractor that led our tractor cave was Gerald McCatherine's tractor, and it had the great big, you know, American flag on each side of the big, we call it bulldozer blade, coming down from the west. And it was so impressive. We just joined right in then, you know. And we decided that we would go as a support for Bev. Bev was the only woman in the United States that drove her tractor all the way without a husband or a man to help her. She was there were women that drove tractors, but she was the only one. And she serviced her tractor. She did everything. I think there was one time when she had something electrical and one of the men had to help her. She was the only one. And we, so we were support for Bev and for Lester. So they stayed with us. And I did the cooking and for all of us. And I would pack lunches every morning. Everybody had their lunch. And Lester, every time he could find a place where there was a grocery store or something, he supplemented. And his truck looked like a nest. And the guy, I don't know how much weight he gained, but I think he ate Oreo cookies by the ton. And of course, then every night, and Lester said, now, he said, it's okay with me if we, you know, we're going to go camping and we're going to go in this trailer and everything. We had a 22-foot trailer on behind our pickup. And he said, yeah, he said, but he said, I have to have a shower every night. He said, I'll haul water, I'll do whatever I have to do, but I have to have a shower. We said, oh, okay, you know, we had, you know, our trailer, you know, had a pretty good tank on it, you know, for fresh water. And so about the first night out, he got out of the shower, and we said, well, how'd you do? Well, Lester's a big man. And we said, how'd you do, Lester? And he said, fine. He said, just don't drop the soap. Oh, so we had, you know, there was so much fun doing what we did, but it was so much work. None of us realized what we were getting into, and none of us realized how hard it would be. Spirits were high and adrenaline was flowing, and you know, we were going to change the world. And Jim Titus, we kept saying, Jim, aren't you going to go? No, I'm not going. And we said, Jim, get your tractor and go. No, I'm not going. Two days before the tractor cave was going to start here, he decided he would go. And so he goes to town and he buys a new pickup. He borrows his son-in-law's little camping trailer. He and Gene had never camped. Gene's going to tell you this too. But anyway, and so he said, I'll drive the tractor, and he said, Gene, you can just pull this trailer with this new pickup. So we start out, and what was it about his tractor? His tractor didn't have a heater in it? His heater wasn't working in his tractor cab. But that was okay, you know. What did we know? And we all gather in Topeka. We all gathered in from the state of Kansas in Topeka. It took us, I think, a day or two for everybody, you know, well, to
I,
get...
I drove his tractor to Topeka.
Yeah, and Ed drove his tractor to Topeka. So yeah, I drove our...
He had to do work on his new pickup.
Yeah. So they get caught up with us. And so Ed's driven the tractor to Topeka, and I'm in our pickup with this trailer. And I was... My idea of this whole thing was I took my knitting, and I was going to just ride along with Ed, and I would do the cooking. That was my idea. We get to Topeka, and it was rainy, nasty, freezing rain. And, of course, Jim had joined up with us by then, and he was going to drive the tractor. And Gene says, Ed, will you just drive my pickup, this new pickup, until we get out of this weather? And Ed said, sure. And, you know, I can drive our pickup. And so the first thing I remember, I have no idea where we gathered, out in the country somewhere, but there was a hill, and it was so icy that most of us had trouble getting up the hill. And so we get started, and 14 or 16 days later, he's still driving Gene's pickup, and I'm still driving ours, because the weather never, ever cleared. Never, ever cleared. And the sun shone the day that we started down into Washington, D.C. We had snowstorms. One place in we were in Virginia somewhere, and they were predicting a blizzard. We were in the mountains, and they said, you have to get off of the mountain. We were supposed to be camping on top of the mountain in a park, and they said, you can't camp here. They said, we're going to have storms. So they said, you have to get down off the mountain, and there was a college campus off the mountain. And so here we are, all these tractors trying to get down off the mountain. That they said, support vehicles all go ahead. You know, you guys all go ahead and get down. And so we start down off this mountain, and we were following Lester's truck. And the snow was so bad that all I saw was the three lights, in the three clearance lights in the back of his truck. That's what I was following. And Ed was the same way. That we were like a, there was three of us. And we got down into that, onto that college campus, and got stopped. And Jean's, what she was supposed to do was to look on the side of the road and make sure I was still on the road. And we got down there, and both of us, we just collapsed. And I told her, I said, it doesn't make any difference where I drive ever again. I will never be afraid. I said,
this was coming at Washington, D.C., where this was?
We were still coming into Washington, mm-hmm. We were in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And Jim, of course, we tried to keep track of Jim, because he just wasn't the best of the drivers. And this one time, he veers off, and we were going under a viaduct, and he went up over it. And so we followed him, because we had to get him turned around, and we got him back down. And the first night out, it froze. And, of course, I think the son-in-law had put water in the little camper and everything. They had not a clue on how to keep a camper, and all the water pipes froze. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the trip, they had no running water in their camper. And so it was kind of like Ed and I were helping Gene and helping our guys. And, of course, we had told Jim all this time, oh, come on, Jim, you got to go. We're going to have such a good time. So here we are. We get up every morning. We get up like 4 o'clock in the morning. Now, we're stopped by about 4 o'clock in the afternoon because we have to service all these vehicles. And of course, Lester had to go ahead. He had to make sure he had enough fuel for our tractors. And then everybody was servicing their vehicles, checking everything out. And then we were exhausted. And so we went to bed pretty good time. 4 o'clock in the morning, we were up. Eating some breakfast and getting the, making the lunches, and because we weren't going to stop. You didn't stop, you just drove. And
did people pull out for pit stops, so to speak? Or?
Well, no, it wasn't so hard on the men, but it was really hard on the women. They devised all kinds of ways for pit stops. Some of them were rather ingenious. And every morning, cold, wind blowing, snow or sleet or rain or whatever it was, here would come Jim Titus. He'd open up the door, wide as he could, in our camper. We were trying to stay warm. And he'd say, are we having fun yet? Every morning, here'd come Jim. So that was that was the humorous part of it.
Now, Daryl told us about staying in Indianapolis in the racetrack or something mm-hmm. area.
After the police and the highway patrol found out what they had on their hands, of course, then they would call radio ahead and tell them. They just wanted us out of their state. When we got stretched out with enough space between tractors, for people to go around us. We were about 15 miles long. Mm. And so then they had to find a gathering place for us. They couldn't let us just come into a city. We stayed on fairgrounds. They tried to put us anywhere where they could. And I think it boggled their minds. They had no idea what was going on. And I think our Western bunch, we were the longest. We weren't we the biggest bunch of tractors that as we gathered them as we mm-hmm. went. And we stayed, they kept us tried to find a place for all of us, and then logistics of getting us back out of there the next morning. Most of the time the highway patrol and the sheriff's officers, all of them were wonderful as far as trying to help us. But it was self-preservation on their part, just to get us out of there.
How long did it take to get there?
Was it 16 days?
14 days.
14 days. We were the last to get in because of our adverse weather. The rest of them, you see, they were coming from the north and the south. What did we have? Did we have five?
Three or four
different trails that were coming into Washington, D.C. And we were the longest, and we had the worst weather. We were about 2 days late.
And I think, did some of the communities sort of host you and or not, food or anything like
no,
that?
No. I think there might have been one time when they helped. And I don't know what town it was, what city it was where we had the blizzard.
I don't know.
Well, you had one in Indianapolis,
Anyway, we were there. We were stopped there for like 2 days and couldn't get out. And that was when we were, the guys just took their tractors and they cleared hospital parking lots and schools and, you know, wherever they could help. They cleared the city.
The gathering point at Washington, D.C. was Fredericksburg. That's mm-hmm. where all the tractors met to gather up so they could all go into D.C. at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Now, did most of the tractors have a blade on them? Or
No. Very few.
Very few.
Mm-hmm. Very few of them did. But we had, and it was, what was it, Dub? Whose tractor was Dub driving? Because he didn't drive a tractor up there, but he was driving someone's tractor. And we were out here at this Cherry Hill campground, and we had gone in. We had been gone in one day before. The men had gone in the tractors and had just completely disrupted Washington, D.C. Well, they were going to have that again. And so, like, it was the next day, I think, we were coming back in again. And what they did was they came from all directions in to Washington, into the Capitol. And we got to here, and everybody had a CB. And Ed and I, we had a little portable television set that I could set on my lap, and we were with Lester, and we plugged in a cigarette lighter. Well, I was seeing news reports, and the news reports were saying that they were herding the tractors onto the mall, and the mall was completely surrounded by buses or vehicles, anything to completely surround the mall, and they had like one or two ways they were herding the tractors in, and they were telling the tractors this was a place for you to park. But we were also hearing that they were going to corral all of them and keep them there. So when I was listening to all of this, and here I was, and I was telling our tractors, I said, don't go in the mall. I said, don't go in the mall. And of course, everything was stopped, and you know, you didn't go very far, and took time-wise, it was a lot of time. And our three tractors that we had that were with us, they took off kind of on their own, I couldn't get them on the radio anymore, and they took off, and we didn't know where they went, and we didn't know if they were in the mall. We didn't know where Bev was. We didn't know where Dub was, and we couldn't find them. And of course, the mall was just—that was chaos in there. And if they were going to herd all these guys in there, there was no way for these farmers and these tractors. There was no way to feed them. There was no sanitary conditions for them. They just got them off the streets. So we had no idea where our guys were. And we didn't dare take our truck in there. We weren't going to get back out. So Lester knew he wasn't driving in there. So we said, okay, we're going back up to Cherry Hill. So we went back up to Cherry Hill, and it was dark. And we were so disheartened because we'd lost our guys. And we got back up to Cherry Hill, and here was Bev, and here was Dub, and they had their feet up, and we said, where have you been? They said, why? They had no idea what had happened. They didn't know. And we said, well, everybody but you two are corralled down at the mall. And they said, no, we decided to just take off on our own. We'd come back up here, you know. And so that was two of the tractors that weren't there in the mall. Then things went downhill from then on. They had to fix up sanitary conditions. They wouldn't let anybody out. People could walk in, you know, and this type of thing, but the tractors couldn't get out, and it was pretty bad.
Some of these tractors could have got out if they wanted to. They were big enough to...
They could have pushed a bus out of the way, but, you know, they weren't going to do that. There was city trucks, there was anything and they were parked, you know, just, you know, bumper to bumper, to where we, there was no way you were going to get between them. It was, I guess maybe you should admire you should admire Washington, D.C. for their ingenuity. Mm-hmm. But it was bad.
So, and did that condition stay until you decided it was time to go home?
Uh-huh. Well, mostly, I think they were letting tractors out a little at a time, to where there were, they weren't all in there all that time. But,
and did they pretty much fill up the mall?
Oh, yeah. All of the commons. That was full of tractors. And of course, sightseers came down, you know. I gotta tell you, I don't know whether you'll put this in the report or not.
Well,
but
it's going to be on unless you want me to.
Well, I was kind of, I don't think this is when we were, this was when we had gone back up for, we were going to lobby. Anyway, we had Alvin Wheaton and Jack Wolf and Ed and I, and there, I don't know who the other guy was. Anyway, it seemed like I was in charge of these men. And we were walking down a street, just, and of course the men all always had their AAM caps on, you know. And some city guy, some guy came by, and he said some snide remark about farmers. And you know how big Alvin is. Alvin turned around and just decked that guy. Smacked him and knocked him down. And by then I was saying, taxi, taxi, taxi.
Get out of here.
Oh, got him out of there. Oh, my. I don't know what else. When we started back home, like Ed said, most of the tractors were hauled back home. And we started home, and Jim and Jean followed us, and we went through Virginia and came kind of a southern route, and we had landladies that we visited on the way back home a little bit, so it took us a little longer than a lot of the guys that just, you know, well, most of them flew home because they were having their tractors hauled back.
So what did you do for those 3 weeks, the initial 3 weeks when you were there? How did you spend your time?
Ed and I, we lobbied. Some of us were assigned certain congressmen to go see. We were down on the Hill every day. Every day we were down there. It was important that there were numbers. It was important that there were numbers of us. And we didn't care who the congressman was. If we could go in and lay a piece of literature on that desk and say that we were there. And we wanted them to know that we wanted them to know the presence of the farmers in Washington, D.C.
Now you have your hat here sitting, mm-hmm. Here, and you talked about selling buttons and mm-hmm. and what was that all about?
Well, you know, almost every state, it's kind of turned into like a convention, a large convention. Almost every state would have buttons, or people had made them just like we did, and we exchanged buttons and collections. You know, we started having collections of buttons, and well, there were a lot of hats. There were a lot more.
Who did you say had the button machine?
Bev Snyder had it. Okay. She was making buttons. When she was making buttons back here before we left, we did that to make money. Mm-hmm. I will say that there were each township in Edwards County. There would be one or two of us assigned to that township that we would go around and ask farmers for donations. Ed and I in Belfry Township were never turned down. We always had somebody gave us money. This was like $10, $20, you know. But we were never turned down. We did a lot of the talking, the speaking. I've still got my speeches. I've still got them.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I'll give you one of them. I'll have to give you one.
Alrighty, that we would like that. Some of these buttons, I think I'm just going to read some, or have you. It says AAM. We have just begun to fight. 1977 to 78. American farmers are the key to your belly. Mm-hmm. American Agriculture First Annual Oklahoma City Convention. Now, mm-hmm. was that before the Tractorcade or at?
Well, that would be after.
After.
And I've got to tell you about our conventions. We, central part of the United States, the states would host them. And we went to Arkansas. Little Rock, Arkansas had a convention. And their governor at the time was Bill Clinton. And he was the only governor of any of the states, Kansas, Oklahoma, Colorado, Nebraska. He was the only governor that came to our convention. And he gave a little talk. He shook all of his hand. I was so impressed with that young man. So then, in the years that followed, when he started, he ran, you know, a primary, you know, and everybody said, "Who's Bill Clinton?" And I said, "I know Bill Clinton." And I said, "He will win the primary." I said, "He will win the primary." And they said, "Oh, we don't even, he's from Arkansas." I said, "He'll win." Well, he won the primary. And at that time, I was county commissioner, and people over there said, you know, mostly Republicans, and people over there said, "Well, who's Bill Clinton?" I said, he's your next president. Ha, 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 they said. I said, "I'm not kidding you." I said, "This man will be your next president." And sure enough, he was the next president. I have loved Bill Clinton through thick and thin, through thick and thin. And the main reason was because that man had enough interest in us to come to one little old convention.
So that's a good story. See, another button says American Agriculture supports you. Let's see, Pulling for Parity, nice one with a green with a tractor on it. This is the funniest one. I wish I was a dog and Carter was a peanut tree. Kansas AAM. Now what's this one that says, well, WIFE?
Wife was born out of all of this, and that was women interested in farm economics, possibly that's what it was, and it became quite active in the state of Kansas, and there's I think there is still a wife convention. I think there still is.
And then there's a little stars all over the hat, and you said, what were those for?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't remember anymore, but I think it was towns that we went to, that we talked, that we had the little stars.
Okay. Farmers feed you, so.
And also, from that came the signs along the main highways that say, "Farmers feed so many people."
That started back in 1979.
That started from that. And what else were some of the things that started from that that keeps on going? But I think right now even people are more aware of agriculture. They don't think that their milk comes, you know, from the grocery store so much anymore. There was a lot of education going on for the public. The one thing we got a lot of publicity local when we came into the town, but national, we became very disenchanted because nationally the news was managed. There was no national news that said there were 8,000 farm tractors coming into Washington, D.C.
I looked in our archives, have the old posts in life, and mm-hmm. I thought surely 8,000 tractors in the mall would be a picture.
No.
And that just really surprised me. I mean, I did this months ago when mm-hmm. we were starting to think about this project.
No. There, we came to the conclusion that our news is managed. That was the first time, disillusionment started when we found out that we would call back home and say, what did they say on national news? They said, nothing. Can you imagine 8,000 tractors on highways and byways coming into one central spot and no news?
Well, in the wintertime when it wasn't an easy trip, too.
I mean, you know, and
it was
no,
a phenomenon.
No news.
Yeah.
Of course, then it was covered when they got us, when we got to Washington, D.C., and we tore up the mall, so they said. And then we found out that they always received the mall every spring anyway.
You can tell them when we gathered in Topeka, when Dole talked to us.
Oh, yeah. That was the last time I voted for Bob Dole. We gathered in Topeka, and Senator Bob Dole talked to us, and he thought that we should all just go back home and let him. He could do what we need to have done. Let him handle it. And that was the last time I voted for him. He was no help at all.
How about Nancy Kesselbaum?
I can't remember too much about her. You know, people talked about her a lot, but I'm not thinking that there was much influence there with her. Of course, Bob Dole was, you know, he was very influential and had was on a lot of committees. But no, we were disillusioned. We had all kinds of reports and statistics, and all we ever got was we would get the assistant to the senator or to the representative. And then I found out that that assistant read that report and interpreted it to the congressman, which, you know, it never ever got there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
is this something that you would do again?
Oh yeah, in a heartbeat. Yeah, I sure would. It is something that I really, really believed in. I'm not sure, and like you said, I'm not sure how much good we did changing any laws. I'm not sure we did, but I think we changed perceptions. I think we changed the perception of them thinking that we were a hayseed that came to town on Saturday night. You know, I think we changed that perception because we had speakers that were so articulate. Men that wrote books afterwards, you know, educated. Well, it was just like our son. You know, he comes back to farm after 4 years of college and 4 years of military, and you're telling me this man isn't educated, and he can't make a living on our farm? The perception of always having... you retired at 65 and left the farm to your son, and he carried on. All gone. All gone. Can't do it. All of those things that we thought was going to happen in our lives didn't happen. In 1983, Mark finally quit farming, and he had farmed since 1976. That's how long it took for him to have to go find a different job. And we talked about it, and we were almost bankrupt. And we talked about it, and we said, "Now, Mark, we'll farm till it's all gone if you want to." And he said, "No." He said, "I've got an education. I can go someplace and I can work." He said, "But you and Dad can't do that." And so he had been married for about a year, and he and his wife packed up and moved to Portland, Oregon. And that was where she was from. And they've lived in Oregon ever since. We just always thought that the farm would be left to him. You know? Wasn't. And all of those things that you grow up with just didn't happen. Didn't happen anymore.
What was it like to do this together? Was it a bed of roses? Or
Ed and I have a unique marriage because we've always done everything together. Most times, most farmers, and that's what you did. You did everything together. But all of this coming up, the wives had to go to town. The wives had to find a job. The husband worked, he got his farm work done, and then he either worked nights or else he worked during day and did his farm work at night. Like I said, all perceptions were changed. And Ed and I were fortunate enough that we still could do all of this together. And I remember one time we were really in trouble with the bank, and we'd gotten a lawyer, and we were ready to figure out how the heck we were going to get out of not losing the farm, which, you know, we didn't lose the farm, but we came so close. And at that time, there were organizations that would help the rural farmer by then. There were organizations that were mental health.
What years are we talking about here?
We're talking about 84 and 85, probably. There were mental health organizations that they were, and through our church, they were saying, you know, come in, let us help you. There were farmers that were drinking. There were suicides. Divorce. Oh, divorce was, you know, really coming on. And so Ed and I, we took advantage. We took advantage of going in for the mental health evaluations and what that could do to help us to figure out what we were going to, you know, how we were going to live. And I remember Ed saying, he said, well, if I have to lose the farm, he said, I will be the best damn whatever I'm going to be. He said, I can do anything. And he can. You know, he's a carpenter. You know, he can do anything. And so that was our attitude. You know, if we have to lose the farm, we can do this. And so we go in for this mental evaluation, and it was stress. You know, what stresses you? Well, I got mad at him because he said, well, yeah, you know, farming was a stress, and, you know, breakdowns and this and that and the other. You know, I said, but no. He said, no. He said, no, Mom, don't think I was so stressed. You know, I don't think so. Well, but then my questionnaire was, you know, all this stuff that you did, and I found out, no, he wasn't stressed. He gave it all to me. and then I got mad at him. But we've always done everything together. We still do. And we had done that ever since we had children. We had made up our minds that we would raise the kids together, and there would never, ever be Mom against Dad. The decisions were made together.
Well, on the tractorcade, you said it was a lot of fun and a lot of work, but the group pretty well hung together through thick or thin, and kept their cool for the most part, maybe?
For the most part. There was that, I think about that first day in Washington, D.C., when the farmers were not going to be pushed around. Well, you know, one guy got maced. I think they broke the window in his tractor and tried to pull him out of his tractor. And it was getting a little hairy. And so everybody had to calm down. And then, of course, then the police, they thought, well, we can't keep on doing this, because that was really bad publicity for them. Mm-hmm. I think that was when they decided that they better corral us.
Well, in situations like that, who was the leadership that would say, okay, we've got to calm down, or would...
We had a couple of guys from Eastern Colorado that started this whole thing.
And who were they?
Well, we're trying to think of their names, and we can...
Well, I think we have them.
I know you've got them, because Daryl would have told you. Mm-hmm. There was leadership there that said, you know, told the farmers, you can't do this. This isn't why we're here. And, of course, you always have a hothead or two. But we just, everybody, you know, and there was huge crowds of people. There was huge crowds of farmers everywhere. And we just managed it. You know, we had to. We could not have that. That would have been chaos. That isn't what we came for.
Well, there had been earlier demonstrations in the 60s, mm-hmm. you know, including the Democratic Convention, mm-hmm. where it did become chaos. Mm-hmm. So this mm-hmm. was a little bit demographic, a group.
Mm-hmm. It was just, I don't know, I think we knew why we were there. And whether or not, I don't know. We didn't do any good. We didn't do any good as far as legislation was concerned for whatever was going to help us with our prices or with our interest rates. There was nothing. But where we did do the good was educating people about a farmer. You know, like I said, I think they still thought, you know, we'd head outside toilets and I don't know. Well, I don't know what they thought. But they did find out that there were some pretty darn educated people out here.
Okay, let's see. Any other thoughts that we need to get out? This has been very, very interesting.
I just have one. I had a family friend that got in trouble with the land bank, the federal mm-hmm. land bank, and mm-hmm. they almost lost. Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't lose the land. They kept the house. Mm-hmm. But then they were still paying for years just for their house that, mm-hmm. you know, they technically paid, but they had to face this high interest rate. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the problems actually stemmed from the government, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And see, this is new concept for me.
Is it sort of like the housing thing now, where they made the housing interest so low and then everybody couldn't?
Exactly. They had, like I said, the Federal Land Bank in 75, in 76, we were going to borrow some money to put in irrigation. And it was like $50,000 or something to put in a couple of irrigation systems that we needed to borrow. And they said, sure, no problem. They said, how much more money do you want? Do you need to work on your house? What do you need to do? How much more money do you want? And we said, well, no, we just want to put in two irrigation systems. But then through the years, from 75 and 76 on, we borrowed more money to put in more irrigation systems. And, you know, it's kind of like the Pollock, you know, that he didn't make any money with one truck, so he got a whole bunch of trucks. He didn't make any money. So this is the concept. They said, you know, how much more money do you want? When Mark quit farming, we were in debt. Mark was in debt. We were in debt. And through some extremely good advice we had gotten, financial advice and legal advice, we saved our farm. And that's the only way we did it. In fact, we had one of them. I won't tell you who our bank was, but our bank's lawyer, we'd had a meeting with the bank and the lawyer said, well, they said, we will bankrupt you because you're pillars of the community and we're going to set you as an example.
He said that in a meeting?
Yes, he did. And then we found out that we could have sued him for it. Mm-hmm. But he did. He told us that. So, you know, by then, you just don't get me that mad. You just don't get me that mad. And I thought, Buster, you know, come hell or high water, you are not going to do that to us. So, those were fighting words. But so many, I mean, you have to understand marriages. If you had a marriage where the husband and wife got along, you know, and sure they loved each other, but they didn't have that much in common except maybe children. And that's a lot of people like that. And when adversity came, they each went a different direction. There were farmers that did not tell their wives how bad off they were. We have a great faith in God. We have a great faith in God. And there are people that could not turn to that. You know, they couldn't turn to their God or to their church. There was just so, you know, so many things like that. And then it got really scary, you know, when you start hearing about guys that committed suicide. Mm-hmm. The drinking that went on, you know, they turned to alcohol. It's how you solve your problem. So there was a lot. And I think about that, and I think, okay, is that the way it was back in the 30s? Mm-hmm. You know, was that the way, you know, some families stayed together and some couldn't?
No. Mm-hmm. Except by the 70s, the divorce would have been easier.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that was the repercussions of that. And they still go on.
Mm-hmm.
We're not out of the woods. Mm-hmm. My gosh, there's all kinds of people, you know, that are still going through bankruptcies. Mm-hmm. They can't make it. And I don't know. You know, at one time, like Ed said, I think we were farming like 2,400 acres and couldn't make it. And we're good. And he's an excellent farmer. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is an excellent farmer. And you know, you don't get all these farm awards, soil conservation awards, because you're just out here scratching the ground. And we couldn't make it with our son. We couldn't that much land couldn't support two families. Well,
are there any other concluding thoughts about the Tractorcade? Or
oh, we'd do it again. I don't care how old we are. We'd do it again. I'm not sure we would be capable of doing it again. Our flocks would be there, wouldn't they, Dad?
That's right.
We'd do it again.
Okay. Oh, that's really interesting. Come on. Let's see what I want to do.